The Chinese goes like this. This is yi, right? One. Yi. And then this is two, which is R. And this is three. And this is yeah. You can think like when Chinese count when you know it gets really long, and we're just doing this, right? Okay, different story. But I think this will be enough for our story purpose. And then here is this is called niu, which means beef. And then there is this, it is called rou. And the rou means meat. Then here is the question to test your Chinese understanding, okay? So this is one, two, three, yi, er, shen, and this is a new rou. Beef and meat. So I'd rather cow meat. Okay, but the question is, when Ricci discovered his famous tensor, what was him eating? According to Dan, this joke is his, not mine. Funny, the English one is mine, but this one is his. According to Dan, he is eating two pieces of beef. Our new rule. Right. So as we're, yeah, you are very confused, but I'm going to erase this again. Because I need a board. And then, yes, I also have something to say about Dan. Is that yesterday, a few of you realize, you know, being together 15 years doesn't mean I can interpret his homework. Oh, I have some interpretation. I have some interpretation, but that might not be his interpretation. The moral of the story, if the instructor hands you anything to do, you know, if you're confused, you should ask them because even their spouse have no idea, right? Yeah, good story. And okay, wait, the tutorial solution is posted. Hopefully you see it. And Thanos has an office hour on Monday, 1 to 2. In case you are having some questions about the homework, I know it's kind of sad that I want you to do it before Monday lecture, make it complicated. So you can also just email me questions. You know, it's possible, you know, your question, if you ask Dan will be like, well, I have no idea what she meant, right? So you have full right of having questions about this homework that somehow is not doable. Okay. And then, yes, I want to say something about the quizzes. Quizzes, they are hard. I mean, Dan and I trying to test each other and hope each other wouldn't get everything right. So they are darn hard. So don't get, you know, discouraged because you see some results. But if you happen to get some quiz right, you should be like, yes, right? Tap your shoulders, got that one. Okay? Hey, they are designed to trick you because we believe there's, at this point of your life, there's no point for us to test you simple memorization. So we want you to struggle with it. You have, if I think I'm writing down a quiz, just testing your memorization, I'll erase that quiz. We always want you to think about it. And if you say, oh, I don't have to think about it, then you tell me, actually erase it. Unless it says a background quiz. If it's a background, then I sort of expect you know. But I'm not sure, but I really want to make sure that everybody knows so that I can start. There's like two or three background quiz, it's like that. But otherwise, that you would be like every single question. Now, some of them, they are not tricky at the beginning. it could be a series of 5 questions, you know, to try to lead you to the trap. No, I'm not trying to trap you. It's just, I hope you got my point. Okay, so I'm not gonna write the puzzle down because we are not getting new puzzle pieces. And but I'm also not going to write down our big question because today, unfortunately, we're not going to make progress on it. But quantum mechanics says, just you wait. One more day, I'll get this done. So today, what I'm going to do, I'll write the goal first today. The goal is very, okay. The goal is find some rep. Really, this rep thing is really helpful. But then I say, we should be more ambitious. So I decided to erase this goal and then replace it by find all reps. Oh, this is just, you know, it's like a dream, right? How could you find them all? I'm not planning to find all the reps for you for all the lead groups today. But I say that if we finish this lecture, we'll have some, in principle we'll have some recipe we can follow to find all the reps. We are going to find all the reps for our beloved SU2. I even write a song for it, so, you know, it's really beloved. Yeah? I kind of sing it until on Monday. Here's one more little part about it. On Monday, a little important part. Okay, so that's our goal. But I would like to see what we have seen so far. Well, we see some symmetry, and the mathematician says they are group, right? Then we see some example. Basically, these two sets of example. You know which one is more popular with particle physics?
SU.
Why?
Because they like to make things complex.
Yes, that's exactly the reason, because they act on the quantum mechanics Hilbert space, which is in principle complex. So no other choice, except you see Latham. And Latham will bring this guy back and say, not a way. Yeah, but sorry, that's a cliffhanger for Lisa. I don't know that much. Okay, so the point is that we realize we need to study these abstract things. We have some rep, and I'd like to call this rep many m-dimensional matrices. So you can have many different reps. Each of them will come with a dimension m, and they are matrices. Okay, then, sorry, now I have to apologize. I think I did something that really confused you and also confused myself. So what I did is writing, this part I think I did okay. It's the last part, the next part. So this part says we can expand. And this time so that's just the identity with indices restored. And this one is the one going from 1 to n. And this 2 goes from 1 to m because it's m by m matrices. And we call this thing generators because they generate the group in the following way, which that's where I score. So I'll try to re-explain what happened. So here is the logic we have. If you have some finite thing, you can just keep chopping them. And then you chop them infinite times, and they become small. And so instead of carrying around this whole thing around and make things so complicated, I'll employ a temporary notation. Says it's some of some matrices, I'm going to finite still some of some matrices. So this thing must be a matrix, just a m by m matrix. Then, instead of writing down the formula I did last time, I'll use this A instead. Ha! These supposed to be there, but I just call it A. It's a matrix. I don't really care what a matrix it is. And now you'll say, okay, this is, it's something I can prove. Because A commutes with A. This matrix is not special, more special than a number anymore. Before we have way too many generators there, it confuses us. No, now there is one matrix. You just square them. You don't care if you switch them to square them or not switch. And of course, there is the other definition of the exponential by the Taylor expansion. And this is exactly how you prove that relationship. You expand left and right and compare first orders. Okay, I hope this makes this confusion clear. Just forget about these guys. It's just a single matrix. Sorry about that. Okay, so what do we do next? Next we say, let's do first order. First order, we have to assume it's a unitary. If D is U, then T is a Hermitian. And as I said, Hermitian means observables. That's why physicists become very excited. And that's what you're going to see in your homework.
What's D and U and T and H again?
D is the rep. U means unitary. And T is the generator. And I should have just write the whole thing. Hermitian. And then we say, Hermitian is observable. Yeah, one like an extra question, bonus question about your homework is think about it and what the generators you find in your homework are observables. But that's not a part of it. Okay, then we went to the second order. And what I call it the quest for this F tilde thing, and depend on these other phi tilde thing. And then we discover this structure constants, which is really describing the structure of the group and the algebra and their constants. So very well the names. So here, what I want to say is this is highly non-trivial. Let's think about, an eight-dimension group. And I can't just like grab random eight-dimensional group with, 8x8 representation. I just grab eight matrices. And then I commute them. Is it going to be a linear combination within that set? No. Unless you were really, 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 really lucky. So this closed condition is hard. And you think of the other way. If I just random write down a bunch of FABC, would I expect that somehow they are coming from a group? Well, Cartan says no. I classified all the Lie groups. If you write down, you didn't happen to write down the structure constant describe one of my Lie group, yeah, you're not gonna find a Lie group.
Who's this Cartan guy?
Cartan guy classified all the Lie groups.
Okay.
Yeah, there is a Cartan group theory guy. By the way, it's marvelous work, even as a physicist. I find what he done is just so beautiful, which unfortunately I don't think I have time to talk about. So I'll try to summarize what he is doing. And if you're interested, of course, you can ask me questions. I'll try to make the very brief outline slightly non-brief. Okay, so this is highly non-trivial. So here's a question for you. So what should I do next? just very in principle, what should I do next?
Third order.
Yeah, right? Like, do you want to do the third order for the whole class? That's probably how long it's going to take. What will we discover? Apparently nobody knows. If you have ever opened a group theory class, they say, oh, you get Hermitian observables from first order, second order, you get this beautiful stretch constant, third order, nobody cares. Why we, stop here. Basically, it's because it's closed. But, okay, I really have to read these three names. So remember, okay, I'm not reading it. Look at this. Does he remember a very long formula? How to deal with, how to deal with this? If you have another one.
Baker.
Yeah, thank you. I don't have to say the name anymore. So this BCH formula. See, what insight does this give us? Insight, I'm not even sure I got the formula right. But all I know is I have these three terms and a bunch of nested commutators. And nested is good because, see, commutator give me two things, give me one thing. So if you have one nest, it'll go back to the commutator. You have two nest, and you just keep all shrinking down. You have, I really don't know what's there. It's like a commuter with B and a commuter with A, and then blah, blah, blah. You can write all sorts of there, and then they manage to find what they are, which is remarkable. But the point is, what do you want it to start with? To start with, why did we all get there? Start with, is we want to multiply two group elements and figure out what we end with. This is the group element. It's the exponential of the infinitesimal. No, at a finite. So it's actually a finite distance. It's a generic group element. So in principle, if we just use this formula, it tells that this two group element will be able to compute it. I'm not suggesting you compute it. But it's possible. We don't need any inference. This tells us in order to multiply two things from finite distance, which we normally denoted as G1 dot G2. Oh no, and then you can put them into matrix and put them into exponential of matrix. And this formula tells us as soon as we figure out this, we're done. So this is why this structure constants truly describe the structure of the group as long as they are all connected to the identity. Okay, that's what I want to say about what we have done so far. It's a bunch of emphasis to say, wow, this is super, super important. Okay, so now back to target. So, okay, all reps. Wait, let's just find a sum rep, okay? So now we look at this thing. Where is this thing? This generators. One goes from 1 to n. The other one from 1 to m. What case would be interesting? I have a bunch of a's. They go from 1 to n, which is the dimension of your group. And this M is the dimension of the matrix, of the representation. What would be very interesting?
Yeah, equal.
That sounds interesting, right? Okay, so our first question is, what if m equals n? And the question is it always possible? Is it sometimes possible? Is it never possible? Now, at this point, it's completely a guessing game. So what do you think? Can you do this for always possible? Like one finger for sometimes possible?
Wait, can you repeat the question?
The question is, there's clearly one case in this generator with this three indices. Would be interesting. What if they are same indices? N equals M, and we don't have to distinguish them. That's clearly interesting. The questions, can we always find such a rep? Or just sometimes? Oh, actually, no. So just it's guesses. So just think about it. So remember, by finding a rep, now that we find our structure constant, we really mean to find this, right? Because they are all equal. I can just use the group dimension. But I know exactly where this thing runs from.
It's supposed to be irreducible representation, whatever.
Wait, what does it mean?
This is the A generator. Mm-hmm. Now it's a matrix of N by N.
Okay.
See this? This is a possibility, right? It's a possibility. I'm not claiming that it's true.
The number of the generators is equal to the
number of the dimension of the rep. The rep.
Is that, what does that exactly mean? Does that mean it's maybe reducible or something?
No, I don't think so. We can always find it. Okay.
I've seen something like that in a QFT textbook once.
Okay. So see, this thing has three indices. Three indices that are exactly the same. Do we have any object that has three indices and all the three indices happen to be exactly the same type of index?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So, no wonder I spend so much time with it, right? It turns out it's always possible. It's called the adjoint rep. To prove this, so I'll do some very sketchy proof, and I hope it's okay. Because to prove it, so many boards, right? So very sketchy proof. You can certainly find this proof in a footnote. So sketchy proof. I'm going to just write it as this. This is basically what we're trying to prove. Is I F with this. Okay, this is TA, TB, IF, TC. That's what we want to prove, is that it forms a representation, i.e. it satisfies this structure constant.
What does that mean, like, if it can satisfy that, why does that mean you can always find it in any, like...
Because every B group has this.
Oh, okay.
Right? This is what we showed before. Everybody has that. And if your representation is only depending on structure constant, has nothing to do with anything else, then it's always possible.
Okay,
this very sketchy proof. And basically, I'm just saying it, well, it's very sketchy. Don't write down. It's like some pair of F.
Raise the board.
Yes, thank you. Sorry, I would always forget, and you should always remind. Sorry. It's hard to put on notes. Raise board, because I don't know which board I'm using. So So here. So it's very sketchy proof, right? Very sketchy. Okay. The thing is that now I'll remind you of the Jacobi identity. Class sig equals zero. And if you look at this, this is IF and then another IF. So this is also FF plus some sig. There's two more FF. So, very sketchy proof. But if you look at the footnote, keep track of all the I's and minus signs, ABCs, you'll realize, wow, it works. Yeah.
Showing commutation relation is conserved is equal to showing the group operation.
Yeah, well, for the close to identity, yes. Because we studied the Lie algebra. Like it for the one not connected. Who knows, right? But hopefully they're nice. Like a, yeah, for the BCH, they have to be at least connected. So that, yeah, sorry. Very good question. I forgot to emphasize exponential has this really nice property. It tailor expands to infinity. Otherwise, see, it doesn't work. The exponential is our friend. Okay, yeah.
Sorry, I was a bit confused what exactly we're proving here. So,
it
satisfies the commutation relation.
Exactly.
And it satisfies the Jacobian.
No. Jacobian is always there. This is just identity. This, if it's a commutator, you expand them out, they don't have to be generators. That's just a pure identity. This identity applies to any matrix, and we're just applying that identity to our generators.
So what does that show? Like if our generator?
So this is what we're trying to show. So what I'm saying is I want to show this, I plug that in, I got something crap like this. And turns out some other identity gave this crap. So you can just inverse the proof of this step. You can go the other direction. You'd be like, it's very satisfying. Yeah?
In the commutator, there's like minus IF, which comes from the TA.
The minus I comes from the definition of adjoint. I is come from the commutator. It's just you have to choose, you have to come with a mind. So basically, so based on index, you're like, please be structure constant. And then you fix whatever inside the coefficient so that this thing work out. Oh, sorry.
If you had to add indices back into the commutator, it would be minus IFA minus IFB.
Yeah, there's going to be some plus minus signs, but there is also, you mean F is anti-symmetric?
My question is more, what is FA? If you have FABC, that's like a three index.
But F, there is no FA, there is only FABC. It's either I admit all the index. So there are supposed to be some ABC and some other index that will provide you the correct proof. But it's a lot of writing, and I don't want to do it on board. In the footnote, I actually carried all the index, and you can keep track of them, and show that with some proper switching and pick up some minus sign, and somehow this line, that line. This is a very sketchy. I'm just saying, look, there is this possibility. And this possibility turns out to be reality. So very, very, very interesting. Okay, here is a question for you. Now I have a generator, and they are matrices, and they are supposed to act on some vector space. What is the vector space it's acting? It's not a trivial question. So I say, look, I have a matrix. Matrix must be acting some vector space. And what could this vector space be? What do we know about this vector space?
It's n-dimensional.
Perfect. It's n-dimensional, right? What object do we have that is, we have n of them?
The generators.
That's right. So the cool thing, real cool thing about adjoint representation is you can do this.
So it's the space of, the
yeah.
Generators are acting on the space of generators, but in this case, the generators are the adjoint because we're in the adjoint representation.
Isn't that cool?
The structure constants. Yeah, sorry, generators are the structure constants acting on the.
So it's cool. We have an object and they are linear independent. Right? So it's a super cool when you write a generator in it. This only works for adjoint. So the next thing, now we have a vector space. We even have a basis vector. When you have a basis vector, what do you want to do? When you study vector space, find the inner product. Perfect. And then the inner product of two matrices is usually defined by this trace. Okay, once you define the inner product, what do you want?
Wait, why is it the trace of
them? Why? It's defined. It's just like they were like, what could it be multiplying together give me a real number? And like definitely not a real number. Like satisfy all those inner products related, give me a number. This number had a better be non-negative. It's if it's the same and then the, dala. Oh, it is real because the generators are real. Wait, no, generators are not real. I'm so confused. They are definitely not real. Okay. So ignore me. So they say they make this, but now, if you have an inner product defined, what do you want to do on the vector space? Yeah.
So I'm a bit confused by the notation. So you have one.
Sorry. Yeah. No, they're all the same. I'm just lazy.
Like, because you have two A's and the same on the same, like one is a superscript, one is a subscript. Are they the same?
AD stand for adjoint because it's very very special. Sorry, it's a very very special rep. I mean, everybody has it.
I'm sorry, I still don't understand the what is FABC exactly? I know what it.
It's a bunch of numbers.
So you're defining your basis to be numbers.
I'm defining my matrices. The entry of the matrices are numbers. It's like a Pauli matrix. It's a good vector space, right?
But you want to represent. What exactly did you want to achieve here when you use the Jacobi identity?
Well, I want to achieve that once I define my matrices, they are actually satisfying the algebra so that they are a rep.
Hmm. But they're
remember I said you just grab random matrices together, they don't form a rep. You have to grab the correct one. It's extremely hard. But then mathematician says, do not worry. Give you the algebra. There is always one rep you can find, defined by this relationship. And they say, I can prove it. If I define this, I can show the Lie algebra is satisfied. And you can completely ignore this part and just look at the footnote. I'm just saying that very hand-weavingly, it seems provable. And also adding the indices are not that hard.
Okay.
but they will take me time. And I have time to talk about more interesting things than that particular proof. So suppose you have some inner product on the vector space, which is we have. What do you want to do?
Span a state in terms of the...
That's right. That's right. That's what we need. Here. Something like this. Is that we can do that. But for a vector space, no, first, yeah, it has nothing to do with group theory. Think about a vector space. You are given a vector space. You are given an inner product. What do you want to do next?
Minutes plus minus
1, 0. Uh-huh. Well, that's could be something we could be wonder about, right? So suppose, see, what we have seen so far, like in the 3D space and this whatever, the inner product of our bases are nice. They're like a dirt ID. There's like 1 or 0. Nothing guarantees this to be true, except the mathematician claim with a huge number, not so huge, small number of assumptions. This can be guaranteed to be and the lambda is positive and it's the same for everybody. So they say, this vector space is so strange. Vectors are generators and whatever. But somehow in that this vector space, I'm able to find this beautiful result. I'll tell you the line of assumption. It's kind of convoluted. But in some special case, you can have this really nice. What does this mean? You can have a very nice basis, very nice, orthonormal basis. Okay, now is where I came with the mathematics interlude. In order to tell you that a condition, I'll read it to you and see if you would just let me go and not explain the things I'm saying. The constraint on this result is it needs to be a compact, semi-simple A group.
Wait, which has to be compact?
If you want to have an orthonormal thing, you need to have compact, semi-simple A group.
And so you can't have... So you can have an adjoint representation for any Lie group.
That's right.
Any Lie group.
That's right.
But to have the adjoint basis be orthonormal, then the Lie group has to be compact and semi-simple. What would happen if it wasn't compact and semi-simple? It wouldn't equal
something like a lambda. Yeah, it's just something else. Yeah.
Question. So you started off with the condition it's equal to n. Where did that come from? Is that just something that we're assuming, or is that
it's a very good question. I mean, there's no reason I start there, but I have some number n, and I have some number m, and they could n is fixed and m is changing all over. Then once in a while you'll be like, oh, what if they're equal? Like people don't know the answer before they ask that, right? So yeah, there's no a priori reason to ask that. Except that case seems to be special.
Is it like useful physically to choose that case or?
Oh, physically very, very useful. And if I don't cover this, Dan will kill me because Francois will talk about them. So that is useful. So cliffhanger for Francois. Okay? Yes, this thing is very, very useful. Basically, let's say they describe gluons and other particles, like the force particles. So there are some fields at the particle field, and there's also the force field. And if you have force field, you probably describe by that. That's how much I can see. I can't really see more. So very, very good question. Now, yeah, can we move on that from this, or you really want to hear the story about the compact semi-simple?
Yeah, wait, what does compact and semi-simple mean?
See? Here we go. That's what I thought. So here is the math interlude. Some, let's just say some random things about a group theory that will help me to explain. So let's start with compact. Compact is actually easy to explain. You do a rotation, you have like a 2π rotation, 0π, 2π rotation, that's compact. You do R. R goes from minus infinity to infinity, then it's not compact. So your parameters not taking infinity, your parameters taking finite value, that's compact. And if you go all the way, then that's non-compact. So I'm happy with that. The next thing I'm happy to explain is what's a semi-simple. Semi-simple is a direct product of simple. So the only thing I need to explain here is what's a direct product. Direct product, you'll be like, really? Physicists use this? It says you have two groups, and you two put them together as a ordered pair. It's another group. Ordered pair. When they multiply together, so these together, those together, they don't interact, they don't change, nothing happens. You're just making a list of objects. Funnily, of course, our entire standard model is built on that. It's the same model in SU3, SU2, U1. Yeah, that's the direct product. So now I know, so the only thing I need to explain to you is what's simple.
Wait, does G1 and G1 prime, can they be from two different groups?
Yes, so this is from group G and then G prime.
How do you know what, like, how to
Combine them,
and they might have a different operator.
Like, yeah, so you only combine the ones with G.
Oh,
and you only combine with the G prime. You never talk to each other.
Oh, and I see the little prime on the circle. Okay, thank you.
Yes. Little prime. Okay, then this prime is. Okay, very good. So now I have to explain what's simple. Whew. Okay, I'll go another direction. I'll first mention random thing that. Then eventually we'll get to simple. Okay, it's not as simple as this, the simple thing. Okay, what I want to introduce is a idea of called normal. I've no idea why normal. It's not really not that normal, it's kind of special. But the idea of invariant subgroup. So we know subgroup. Subgroup is the best definition. If you are subset, your group, your subgroup. So what does normal mean? So there are other ways of, but I feel I like the way I want to explain. I want to say that it's kind of a realization, like it relaxed the commuting. So you know that they could commute. So people often denote this as N, a member as H. No idea why. So this is called a commute. I haven't defined this yet. I'm just saying we know if you can switch, they are commute. So H is in the N, and the N is some subset of G because it's a subgroup. So now I claim that if for any G and H, they don't commute, but sort of. So they they become another member of the norm. We can see that this is not usually satisfied. But some occasionally, or in my other notation, I say G and this blob commutes with. So this blob is our this invariant subgroup. Then this is the definition of the invariant subgroup. So as a collective entity, they commute with every single of the other group member. So they're kind of special, right?
Mm-hmm. Is this just like picking out the elements that do commute with G?
Not really, because you can have an H here and H prime there.
But that doesn't really commute, does it?
Yeah, I know it's not commute. That's why I said a sort of. So there's a, it just says this is a H prime, which belongs to the normal subgroup. It's not like a, say, J2 that it does not belong.
Okay, so as long as
you stay in this blob.
And then it sort of, on the next side, it one of the H's and N, then we say, okay, that's...
Yeah. So very good. So that's the idea of this invariant subgroup. I understand the invariant. I have no idea why this thing is normal. It doesn't always happen. So using this, what people say about the Dirac product is G is normal. And the G prime, G and the G prime is both normal in this Dirac product. If you can try to test, because you know they never talk to each other, so they will mix up within themselves, but they don't have other outside elements. So almost there. And so this gave you an interesting thing. So there is this blob, right? And I can use some random element multiplied by the blob. It's either the same blob or a different blob. Then I have a different blob. I can do this thing over and over again. And then basically I'm saying I used to have a group, which is G. But now I find some structure. I just make a bunch of what mathematicians call the coset. Which is just you take a group element, multiply by the blob. If you get a new blob, you keep it. Old blob, well, you're not drawing another blob. And then you just have lots of blobs. And this is where mathematician says, ooh, I like blobs. I will name this blob an equivalent class. Well, that's what they do, right? This blob is kind of all like each other. They say, they're equivalent. I'll consider it's just a dot. And then I have another dot, and another dot, and another dot. And if you think about it, it's equivalent to glass. So this thing actually forms a group. And this is what mathematicians call it, the quotient.
Why is that?
Because if you use, it's like if you use this, multiply by this blob, you get the whole thing.
Okay, isn't the whole, that what's in the set, like the blob, and we multiply it by G, like the G1?
So this blob, and you will have another copy, and another copy.
Same blob.
It's not the same blob. Yeah, sorry. This is blob zero. Zero rules them all, but you can produce many blobs. And mathematicians are like, I don't care how many blobs you produce. Each blob, they are sort of equivalent.
Sort of equivalent. Wait, okay. So the blob is a subset.
This is the normal thing we talk about.
Yeah. Exactly.
And then this is G1 times. This is G2 times N.
But that's not, but the blob isn't the same N, right? Like you could have like a slightly different subset. Is that why it's blob one?
Yeah. If it's called blob one, means it's another subset. Wait, so it's just like normal, except it doesn't connect to identity. right? And then you have another blob, we have another blob. And then Ms. Manishan says all the blobs form a group.
Does the blob separate from the G1? So like G1,
no.
Blob 1, that's not a bigger blob, that's just...
Okay, let me draw another picture. So this is G.
Yeah.
This is blob, blob, blob. That's called as blob.
Do the blobs overlap?
Nope.
Oh.
No, that's why you can do the equivalent class thing. And you just have like lots of blobs covering.
Okay.
And then now you can see if I have these many things, I can say all the blob, each blob is just one thing, and I can divide it.
Okay. What's the operator on this group? Like, how does it?
It kind of inherit from the original operator. There are gonna be some. So it's kind of define it with circles because the multiplication of this. Great question. Homework. Blob times blob equals blob. Very good question. I'll figure that out. But now we are finally at the simple group. Single group. Well, I guess Ms. Manishan says if you can divide and turn them into small groups, certainly you're not a simple. So the simple says you don't have a non-trivial thing that this thing that you can divide. Well, of course, because everybody has, you know, identity, the subgroup identity, so that they have this non-trivial. So then in that sense, it's simple. It's not a gigantic thing, than a bag of blobs. It's already dealt with. And, yeah.
Confused on the definition of blob. So, for example, blob zero is...
Blob zero is the one that managed to commute.
Blob is equal to blob times E.
What? Blob times E.
E times blob is equal to blob times E. Is that the...
That always happened.
That's what I'm...
Yeah,
sure
that's all, always happened. But it happens to every single group element.
Yeah, so what are the differences between the blobs? I'm kind of confused. So
This blob has E, and this blob will have G1 because this one has E.
Is G1 times blob 1 equal to blob 0?
G1 times...
Like, how do we end up getting blob 1, really? Where does it come from?
Just pick a random group member.
A
very random. It's not especially taken. You just say, like, oh, you are not in the blob. I'll take it and multiply by the whole blob. Do I get a new blob? If you get a new blob, then you list it. They don't overlap.
I know they don't overlap, but did we prove it somewhere, or is it really intuitive?
No, it's not. Very good. We'll have more discussions about the blobs and the quotient things. Anyway, I hope that with this interlude, it's sort of okay for me to say compact semi-simple group. This will happen.
Okay. So for every G,
yeah,
there is an invariant subgroup N that is a subset of big G?
No, N is the fixed. N is fixed.
N is
fixed.
And then
blob 1 is G1 times the blob. Blob 2 is G2 times the blob.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
But I thought the blob wasn't including the little G.
The blob...
They have to be.
So you take... So, okay, let's be concrete. This blob has member H1, H2. Okay, I'll just list two.
Okay.
So this guy... We'll have G1, H1, G1, H2.
Okay.
And this blob will have G2, H1, G2, H2, so forth and so forth.
Okay.
And whenever you see a blob you have already seen, throw them away until you have managed to cover this entire circle.
What was this? So where did this come from? Why, the blob I understand, but why did we times, why did we multiply that, so to speak?
So that you can do this division. This is related to this not overlap question. Because you can tie, basically it's a tiling.
So this is working in reverse. So if we see that and
yeah.
we say, okay, that's interesting, they don't overlap. But what if someone wanted to, they knew what the normal subgroup was.
Yeah.
And they wanted to find an equivalency class, so to speak.
Yeah.
How would they come up with the, okay, so if I want an equivalency class,
uh-huh.
I could just say, okay, I have the blob. And I have the blob, G1 times the blob, G2 times the blob.
Well, it's the same idea. You have to know that they don't overlap. Then you're like, now I can see shrink each blob.
The motivation of the person who actually wrote this for the first time.
It's a mathematician. You ask me the motivation of a mathematician. That's a little harsh, right?
G1, H2, like in blob 1, like is that?
No, these are two separate elements.
But like, then what are we, what is the equivalence class between which?
It's this whole blob equivalent to each other.
So yes, so G1, H1 is equal to G1, H2.
Right? That's right.
Okay.
It's after this process, we define this guy to be the same. That's right.
Okay.
How would I know the motivation of a mathematician? Sorry, but it's a little hard. I don't understand a mathematician. Well, that's why I'm not doing mathematics. You should ask a mathematician. Like Kevin probably know the motivation. Their motivation is to make things get simpler, and it worked. And they were like, "Hooray!" Okay. So I'm definitely not gonna prove this to you because we're out of time. It's good. We have nothing. It's very good. Like this is very hard. Like if you asked me 7 years ago when I was teaching group theory. Right? It's very hard, and these are very good questions, and I'll look them up, and then we'll figure out. But I'll try to find all the physicists' motivation for you. And okay, I'll just make this claim, and the proof is in the footnote. The claim is once this is done, you can show this is completely anti-symmetric. And you can also normal this funny vector space. So back to semi-physics. Okay, this thing mathematician says if you have this thing and you can no, it's not renormalized, but you can set lambda to be 1, and then you can show this thing is completely anti-symmetric. And I forgot to mention the most important property of the structure constant is A and B is anti-symmetric. But with this, thing that they say this is completely anti-symmetric. And it's in the footnote. It involving calculating something like this. And in all sorts of different ways.
Wait, so if the Lie group is not compact and semi-simple, then FABC won't necessarily be like anti-symmetric?
Completely anti-symmetric.
It won't be completely.
Okay. It wouldn't.
Okay.
And well, this is very cute. See, it's even more symmetric than we know, right? Really nice. So, now be your turn to do some problems. But very, no, thank you. I would understand more things about of group. And here is the question. Since we discussed this is a matrix, this is the vector space. So this becomes a valid question, right? What do you think the answer is? You're gonna get a vector and your ingredients are TA and TB. Any guesses?
TC.
I want to know what's TC. Yeah, you have ingredient, matrix number one called the TA, matrix number two called the TB. What do you think you'll get? We know it's going to be a vector somehow. What can you do with two matrices? And what would you have been doing all the day? Uh-huh. All right, so you have... Oh. Okay, great. We're not going to do it because I'm running out of time. And you guessed it. But if you want to do it, of course, go ahead. It's kind of cool. You just use all the things we learned today, and then you got that. And this become very interesting if you so have a desire to understand how Catan classified everything. So it's an important result. Okay, let's have a break. So now we have adjoint representation. That's achievement, right? But now we're in desperate. But what do I do with the other representations? There seems to be infinite amount of groups. But the hope is not lost. You might have heard of this. People say, oh, D1 is our only hope. This is not true. You might have also heard that R2, D2 is our only hope. But this is a lie. So now it looks like a lie. The correct answer is SU2 is our only hope. So for the rest of the day, we are going to...
Is that also a reference, SU2?
Is our only hope, is correct. And so the story about SU2 is you can actually find all the reps of it, all. Okay, so let's look at our, but I hope everybody knows this by heart now, that we have some structure constant. What's the easiest structure constant? It has a 3 index. What would be the best for these 3 indexes to take? How many? Well, it's completely anti-symmetric. We will study the simple ones. Simple ones. If they're completely anti-symmetric, they have 3 index. Any candidates? Yeah. And that is our SU2. The simplest non-abelian group. And actually, you have seen some rep, right? Well, m equals 2. We found some Pauli matrices yesterday. That's known as the fundamental representation. No. Fundamental in some way, but I call it the defining representation because we're studying SU2. We take the SU2 matrix, we expand it, defining. So you'll find this in Pauli. And now you also have some m equals 3 because yesterday we have a long time looking at the mathematic and they're convinced. They are actually SO3 is basically the same as SU2. And if you're talking about Lie algebra, you can take the basic away. And you often find this. I'm trying to write one of them. It looks something like this. I'm not sure that the minus sign is like the right place, but something like this.
It is.
Yeah?
Cosine, sine, minus sine.
Yeah, yeah, but this is the algebra. It's the generator.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, okay. Oh, okay, perfect. And I'm right. Thank you. So let's stare at this for a bit. Let me remind you, SU2 has this property. And this rep has this property. Could we not expand the SO3 group and also come up with this? And then we have structure constant of this property. Yeah? Let's see, row 2, it has a number at 3. Row 3 has a number at 2. And otherwise it's 0. Where could we somehow get this? Hmm? Edrond? Yes, see? Yes. This one, if we look at A equals 1, so T1, T1 has the property that either 1, 2, 3 is something or 1, 3, 2 is something. Otherwise, 0. That's what this was. So yesterday you already found two representations. Both are very important, the defining and the edge. You find the adjoint in some other way, but it is the adjoint. Okay, so how could it be possible that today we make such a claim that we're gonna find them all? No, exactly not that. Very good. So here is a recipe. The recipe is step one. I'll give you motivation later, okay? I'll write the recipe first. Recipe says there's gonna be some maximal commuting things. And so there are three of them. J1, J2, J3. What's the maximum commuting one? Maximal commuting subset of J1, J2, J3. So everything you throw in this set has to be commute to each other.
Uh-huh.
Just one of them?
Just one of them. J3. Well, people always pick J3 for some reason. And then, let me call this thing special because we pick it in step one. Then next step is to find eigenvector of this special thing. Eigenvector defined in a very interesting way. But it's eigenvector. It's as using the Lie algebra commutator binary operator. It's acting something equals constants times that something. So eigenvalue equation. Yeah? And you're like, why? Right? I'll get you. Okay? So I'm not going to have time to tell you why one of this happens to be this. Okay? I'm just going to tell you the results. The results is somebody, the idea is that you take all the rest, which we have two, J1 and J2, you write it as AJ1 plus BJ2. So throw it in, say which A and B you have to pick for that to be a constant. That's the game to play. And it turns out if you find the one, The other one is just the dagger of this. Okay. I will write down the eigen vector eigenvalue equation. So that says there were two of them. One linear combination and then one with a minus sign. It turns out that their eigenvalue is also plus and minus. So this subscript is actually describing the eigenvalue. It's kind of neat. And here we go. This is going to be good. Where have you seen this?
In quantum mechanics, yeah.
It is the angular momentum, but it's also, you have actually seen it before angular momentum in quantum mechanics.
Harmonic oscillator.
Harmonic oscillator. This is nothing but this guy. Unfortunately, I have to give the correct credit to the group theorists because group theory is way earlier than quantum mechanics. So the important part about this ladder operator is exactly because this happens to be true. So let's recall what we did there. We say grab this n, find this thing, and then we realize so I'm using a plus minus instead of a dagger. No dagger, it's easier for me to write things. And you know this. And then you say, if I find the ground state, which is bounded below, happy ending, done. You can also try the differential equation. Okay. So, the only thing we need to do is to copy, paste, and change some letters. Right? What's the analogous of this thing?
Analogous where?
You know, like in this case, in J3. In our SU2, it's J3. Let's say they have some nice eigenstates and they are even orthogonal. Huh? Thank you. This is very silly. No idea why it would do that. And then plus minus would be plus minus. It's just I'm changing A into J and N into M, and then it should be okay, right? And then we will draw this, I'll draw it here. This very nice ladder with a bunch of things, and it says if I'm at M, I can use J plus to go to M plus one, and I can use J minus to go to M minus one. So the next step is a slightly different. The mathematician who solved the problem, I mean, at this point, like the rest is simpler, right? This is the key. The key is that someone has this insight. If I can build my ladder operator, I will know everything. And I need to erase that, but since it's not at all surprising. Okay, the next step. Yeah?
I just have to find something that, like, at the vectors in this vector space, they're degenerators, like TA. What are the eigenvectors? Is it just the linear combination of the generators?
Yeah, it's really. Is what they call this as an eigenvalue equation, because it kind of looks like m times x equals lem times x. And the eigenvector is these generator, basically. The eigenvector of that eigenvalue equation are the generators that are not special. And so mathematician has this insight. It's, I mean, not too surprising, but it called the highest weight. Weight is what a mathematician called the eigenvalue. Also, I don't know. It's a lot of names, I have no idea where they are, where they come from. And they claim there exists a highest weight. I mean, the hope is to find all the finite rep. So there got to be a cutoff somewhere. I mean, you can start from there, but the mathematician decides to start there. Okay, so then what we do know is that this is going to have some normalization things. We know they're going to be proportional, but who knows normalization? That's what happens in physics too. We know there's going to be a normalization, and you do some harder work and figure out. Right? This is the same. We have no idea what's the normalization a priori, but we do have a boundary condition, which is this. It says.
N times j plus, or no, n with. It's an
argument, the j plus one. Basically, tell us the idea of this. So this can be interpreted like this because j plus and j minus, they're daggers of each other. So you can take some daggers, and then you arrive at this. The next thing is finally use the commutator relationship like that. So the thing in the middle, you can do that because we know they are J1, J2s, and you can find out what's this. It's indeed this.
Wait, why does the ket flip from a blob to ket?
Oh, sorry. This is a blob.
Oh.
So we want to plug in this equation between them and then compare both sides and the blah, blah, blah. And the right side clearly gives us an M. The left side, because there is one, it's either J plus J minus or J minus J plus. So I hope you're not surprised the result is a square. If you are surprised, it's three lines maybe. It's definitely in the note.
Wait, so we're squaring the function of n and it's looking up this function of m.
It's a normalization constant.
Oh, n's not.
See here.
Wait, okay. So n is just a constant.
Yeah.
It's not a function of n.
It is. Well, it's kind of a function. Well, it's like for each m, you have an n.
Okay.
So it's kind of a function.
Okay, we're squaring n.
Yeah, but it is a number, so I can square numbers.
Okay.
And this come from, I can't remember, but a j plus j minus will give you one of this, j minus j plus will give you the other. And this m clearly comes from J3 atom m. So I'm not going to do this. I'll just say.
Oh, we flip the m squared of m to the other side. So it's originally on the. Wait a second.
There is a minus sign between them. So there should be a minus sign between these two.
Okay. Yeah, so we put it to the other side.
Yeah, oh, okay. Yeah, this m is flipped. I'm not going to tell you where we get that because it's not the result is very interesting. The result is, I don't know how to solve it. So like if I have to solve it when I was young, I would be like, you know, you start with this and then you go down and you go down half the, it's like 1, 3, 5, 7, 9, what's the next number? That would be my approach. But of course, now we have Mathematica.
Is it J minus J plus the commutation relation?
What?
J minus J plus.
Maybe there is an error on my note. I can't tell you right now. Like I can do that. but I don't want to. Because so look, I don't want to keep you long because I have a mistake on my note. It might be J minus or plus. And the idea is you can throw it to Mathematica. So it's R solve. This is my recursive relationship. This is my boundary condition. And hula, Mathematica spit out the answer. It's amazing. Then we do some Sinity check. Sinity check is here, says M equals J plus one, this thing disappears. Good, Mathematica is right. The boundary condition is satisfied. And I invite you to look at the other term. Yeah, but there's other term. What do you think about the other term?
Which other term?
It has such a factor under the square root.
Is it a factor that we didn't think we would get?
It's not. I have no idea where they come from. This one comes from our boundary condition. We'd better have this term of some sort. When M equals J plus one, it's zero. So we would have a term of that with whatever power they want, but it has to be there. And this term come out. What does this term tell us? It also goes to zero. And if you use our convention, it says J minus K tau minus J goes to zero. I mean, this has to happen if you are looking for a finite rep. You have to do. So, interestingly, this ladder has a ceiling and a floor. The ceiling is at J, and the floor is at minus J. So the question is, how many steps are there on this ladder? Today, if a ladder has minus one to one, you have two steps. And then if you have J to minus J, you will have 2J steps on the ladder. And this is where the surprising results come. What's the requirement of 2J then? Yeah, steps.
Would you say what's the what of 2J? Did you say requirement?
Requirement? Like if you, I say from here to here, I have 2J steps. Climbing on.
2J plus 1 because there's a 0 in the middle. Oh, but I guess it's the number of steps.
Steps.
Number of levels.
If I'm one step, two steps. If it's steps, what can it be?
Wait, what do you mean? Okay.
Can anyone demonstrate how to take a 0.5 steps? One step.
Oh, you're saying it's quantized. Is that what you're saying?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It is what I'm saying. Is this thing is quantized, right? You can't take steps on the ladder. So you can't say, arbitrarily, I take this many steps. So this is quantized. In other words, it has to be an integer. And then, what does that mean about the J then?
J is like
it's a half integer. Ooh. So we just learned if we want to find all the reps of SU2, all the rep is labeled by a half integer.
Okay.
Since many of you mentioned angular momentum, what does this tell us?
Spin.
Spin! Half integer says, whoa, we discovered a spin. Okay, I'll write this thing like this.
We got, hold on.
Yeah.
So if you have two J steps, right? Two
yeah.
J steps, and you're saying we have an integer number of steps, right?
Yep, that's right.
J could, in theory, be an integer, and an integer times two is still an integer.
That's right.
But what constraint that tells us that J has to be a half integer?
Half of a four is also a half integer. Half of an integer, if that integer is even, I can still call it a half integer.
Yeah.
No? Sure. So it has to be half all the integers plus numbers. So I just decided to call it a half integer because the integer can be even all. So since we have this normalization constant, I can write down, for example, the matrix element of G plus using the definition of the normalization constant, which I write it for G minus. But the point is, you can write one for G3, you can write for G1, G minus, and if you want to go back to G1, G2, nobody stops you. If you find all the matrix element of a generator, you find all the rep.
Oh, wow. Wait, all the representations?
All the rep. You found all of them, right? You never assumed how big is J. If you want to go to 25, who stops you?
So each J is a different, like, a different generator. Okay, wait. Why is that all the representations? Like, if J is, like, each J is a generator.
Each J is a generator, right? So I'm just saying this is what I write, but you can write something like this. You can also write something like this. They are all known. They are all either related or not related to the normalization constant. They are known. So if you know all the matrix elements of all your three generators, we are done. Cool.
Wait, where can you take that into, like, any representation? I'm somewhat confused.
So if you take a, because this thing depends on J. So first, whatever you want, 535 and a half, no problem. Now it's become our only function of n of n. And now you ask, can I have this J plus with the index going that high? No problem. It's given here.
Oh, so the representations are just differentiated by how big the matrices are?
Yep.
Oh, really?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Well, sorry. not quite. I mean, occasionally you have some degeneracy and you have a different mix. So let me finish and I'll let everybody go and I'll stay for as far as you want until Aldo kick me or you should eat lunch. I think lunch is a priority and I'm here anyway after your relativity tutorial. I just want to finish so people who want to leave can finish. And you're like, that's at least what I have already, right? What do we have? This is a trivial, we don't care. This is a 2x2, we found it, poly. And this is a 3x3. And the thing is, so now I go back to your question, that if you have 3x3, and if you write it out according to this nice plan, you're like, it's nothing like this. It's way more complicated than this thing. And you begin to wonder, did we find another spin one representation? Turns out, nope, they're the same. because this method claims I can find all of them. So those two gotta be included. And so, yes, I'll end here.